You're listening to the Packernet Podcast Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Packernet Podcast. I am your host and resident panelist, as always, Ryan Schlipp. Check us out online, packernet.com. Find me on Twitter, pack_daddy. So today is officially game day, so what I want to do is go over some new news like Tony Brown, maybe rehash a couple other thoughts, maybe not, probably not. But the biggest thing, obviously, is looking at all the games that are going on, which ones matter. Obviously, a lot, it's pretty locked in which ones do, and very few actually matter to us. However, one little twist that I want to put on it this week, because I want it to be somewhat interesting, is I want to actually look at some of these playoff teams and kind of zoom in a little bit, because and I think this has been a theme of mine for a while, is that we kind of get locked into one particular image. And whether it's been built by the media or built by, for example, the 49ers the last time we played them, it has an impact on us so that we feel a certain way, right? When we think about the Titans, we think, who cares? When we think about the 49ers, we think that's insurmountable, maybe, in Lambeau. The problem is most people don't even realize the 49ers have been falling off a little bit. There's some concern about what's going on with this team. Same with the Seattle Seahawks. And so, you know, obviously we can't spend too much time going fully in-depth onto each team, but just sort of a general overview of maybe kind of where the team is at. Because we might have to play these teams, even in the AFC, which to a lesser degree. But who knows, we might see some of these teams in the Super Bowl. So that's the little twist that I wanted to put on it. If we do end up getting the bye, maybe during the bye week, we can spend a little bit more time going in-depth, especially if we know who we're going up against. We can kind of gauge, you know, it'll be, we're playing one of these teams. You know, you'd be able to lay out all that stuff. But if any of that made sense, that's the plan for today. If you wouldn't mind doing me a favor, jumping in the Packernet Podcast Facebook group, liking the Packernet Podcast Facebook page, and then the number one way that you can help is just to help spread the word. So when I say leave a 5-star iTunes review, the only reason is because it helps raise the show in the ranking so that when somebody goes through and they just start picking the top couple, which is what I did when I started out with podcasts, it's like, all right, let's try this one. And you listen to the top two or three and you're like, okay, these are Packers podcasts. You don't usually go down to 4, 5, 6, 7. And so the higher up I get, the more likely it is somebody hears the show and realizes that this is, in fact, the best show that there is about the Green Bay Packers. You'd hate for them to get locked into a certain podcast or another one and not realize there are better ones out there. Not naming any in particular, whichever. There's some good ones out there, I'm just saying. They gotta at least taste the flavor of the Packernet Podcast. But of course, any other kind of word of mouth, anything else in Facebook groups, Reddit, whatever, we gotta just let the people know, man. Otherwise, I think that's it. That's all I got for you. Let's take a break and get on with the show. Well, given that today is officially game day, I'm guessing I can't talk you into getting some Lions tickets, which, by the way, as I've said several times, if you're going, make sure you get those pictures up in the Facebook group. But I want to return to this, because I'm really starting to feel it now. And I know not everyone can. That's fine. You and I will get there one day. In 10 years, me and you, man, we'll coordinate buying playoff and Super Bowl tickets together. But for right now, I'm talking to the folks that got it. Apparently, I got through to somebody on this message once before, and I want to try to hit you with it again. There are no guarantees that you're going to get an opportunity to see the Packers in the playoffs again. Maybe you've already gone. Maybe you've never been. You don't think it's that big of a deal. But again, what I talked about yesterday as far as some of the greatest memories we've seen being in the playoffs. I mean, just through the years. Think about the year we went on the Super Bowl run, how crazy that was. We weren't expected to beat hardly anybody. The Eagles in the wild card, that was kind of like a maybe we'll win. All those last second interceptions by who? Tremont? Wasn't Tremont one of them? Beating the Falcons when we were never supposed to? How great would it have been to be at the Bears game where Cutler's sitting on the sideline riding his bike? Granted, there's been some painful ones, but you can't tell me that playoff games aren't some of the most memorable games you've ever seen in your life. And what I'm telling you is if you go on Vivid Seats, the tickets aren't that expensive. I mean, they're not cheap, but these aren't Super Bowl tickets. You're not spending $1,000. So spend some time and think about it. You're going to have some time. Hopefully you'll have a couple weeks to sort it out in your mind. But you're going to want to be able to get the tickets while they're relatively cheap, hopefully. I mean, in my mind, I don't know. I'm thinking playoff games, $500-$600 a ticket. I don't know. When I went on there and saw like $150, $170, it's like, you got to be kidding me. But if you are planning on going, make sure you check out Vivid Seats. At least use it to compare. And remember, they've got the 100% buyer guarantee. You get the rewards back so that next time you purchase something, you've got some credits. And we've got the promo code OVERTIME, which is going to give you an automatic discount of up to $100. Up to $100. I'm not guarantee you $100. So I would just encourage you to just think about it and just peruse it. Just download the app, look around a little bit. Plug in that promo code, see what it does for you.
We all have smartphones, and we all know they're pretty amazing, but they also can be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. So U.S. Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for five. That's right, a company that sells phones wants us to put down our phones. And to see what we find, learn more at uscellular.com/built for us.
Something else I wanted to plug real quick. I'm sure you'll all be very excited to hear this, but it's not super great for me. Obviously, as the NFL season kind of winds down, advertisers are not super pumped about, you know, football shows anymore. But I'd like to keep the pipeline full. So number one, if you are a business owner, or two, if you know somebody that is, you should probably reach out, because I am going to offer a finder's fee if things end up working out. So I'll just leave that hang out there. I know I've had somebody reach out in the past. I don't actually handle the negotiations, so I don't know where it went south, but apparently it did. But it would be worth looking into. And again, it's worth it to me to offer to compensate you if you can set something up, or, you know, at least start off a conversation. All right, so let's start off with the Tony Brown getting cut thing. Somewhat disappointed. I've always liked Tony Brown. He's just been one of those guys that is just kind of solid, you know? I don't think he was ever going to be like a legit starter type, but I, if anything else, I loved the energy. I remembered him coming in and just playing real, under Mike McCarthy, playing fast and violent football. Even if it was a little kind of reckless, you know, one of those guys that'll give one up and then come back and just smash a guy. I always liked it, but apparently the Packers needed to, it's one of two things, right? Either they just wanted to get rid of Tony Brown because they wanted to get rid of Tony Brown, or they needed a roster spot and he was just lowest man on the totem pole, or I guess some variation therein. I mean, it's possible there's somebody else they have lower on the totem pole, but they can't get rid of him because of depth, for example, right? Like, if you just look at PFF, Montrevious Adams is the lowest graded defender, and then it's Oren Burks. They're not getting rid of Montrevious or Oren Burks, right? So it's probably something to that effect. But then the big question is, okay, you got rid of him, why? Now, obviously, if you want to get rid of him just because it's not working out, then you get rid of, it's one of those things, you get rid of a guy, and then it's just kind of, well, we'll see what happens. But I think most people are assuming Tony Brown was not the kind of guy who's so bad we just need him off the team. One of those guys, because the teams eventually get to a point where you realize this just isn't working, and you just get rid of the guy. Maybe that's the case with Tony Brown. I just find it hard to believe. I mean, he hasn't played a snap since week 9. However, week 9, he played 19 snap, 10 times against the run, 9 times in coverage. He gave up, he was targeted once, gave up one reception for 6 yards. His PFF grade, for whatever that's worth, 74.7 overall. Run defense was a 75 grade. He had 4 tackles and a stop on just 10 times playing a running down. And his coverage grade was a 68.9, so basically 70s or close to 80s across the board. I mean, he's 6 foot tall, 200 pounds, 4.35 speed out of Alabama. His last game he played was really solid. I just have a hard time believing the Packers are like, nah, there's nothing here. So again, I tend to agree with most people that this is about making room for somebody. And the consensus is that somebody is probably Raven Green. Now that one, I mean, I don't know, man. I mean, I get it. I mean, I don't know. it's kind of hard to, they would have to really like Raven Green. And there's not, I don't have a problem with Raven Green. I'm not anti-Raven Green. I'm anti being overly hyped about Raven Green. I know some people just love the guy, and that's where my personality is to pull back and go, no, he's not that good. But I don't have a problem with Raven Green. Same with Tony Brown or any of these guys. These guys are, I would actually put them on a similar tier. I love them as depth. They're the kind of guys that I'll take them. I love them being on the team as depth. If somebody goes down and they come in, it's like, you know, it's not ideal, but it's not like, oh, we're doomed. You know, you see Raven Green come out and it's like, oh, okay. You know, in some ways you might even get excited. You know, if Savage went down, it's like, oh, no, and then Raven Green comes out. You might be thinking, man, I don't know if the coverage is going to be quite up there. But against the run, I don't know. This might actually be kind of ideal, right? And to be honest, the fact that they have my thought on this just off the cuff, why would they do this, not realizing Raven Green was due to return around now, was maybe it's some kind of a running back. Number one, because Brian Gutekunst, every time there's a void, he wants to fill it with a running back. Probably because the hit percentage is relatively high, guys that can succeed running the football because it's just one of those positions. And then number two, we got Jamal that is injured, and we got Danny Vitale that's injured. Now, I don't expect either of these to be long-term, so I thought it was a little weird, and we don't need to cut Tony Brown to bring in some, you know, third-rate running back to beat the Lions, so that it just, the whole thing was weird, which is why the only thing I can think is that the Raven Green thing must be true, that they really like him, they like his skill set, and they feel like he brings something that's going to help elevate what we're going to be able to do. And a lot of it has to do, I think, with Mike Pettine's scheme. This is what I think is also interesting about the, for example, the Dean Lowry signing, which is a good chunk of money that surprised a lot of people, as well as the Lucas Patrick signing. I think one of the things, and it goes beyond, for example, PFF grades, it goes beyond a lot of these things. Matt LaFleur as an offensive coordinator, essentially, the guy who says, this is what I want in an offense, and Mike Pettine as a defensive coordinator saying, this is what I need in a defense. The point is, when you find a guy that does those things that your defense requires, you lock him up. And I think Lucas Patrick crossed that line into being that guy. In other words, he can do the things that I need. Matt LaFleur says, in an offensive lineman, in an interior offensive lineman, I need you to do A, B, C, and D. And once he demonstrated he could do A, B, C, and D, even if it's not to a massively impressive level, this is the kind of guy that I need in my offense, and I want to lock him up, especially for a cheap price of $3 million bucks over 2 years or whatever. And I just kind of wonder if the difference between Tony Brown and Raven Green, and especially Raven Green, because there's no question that Raven Green has been elevated by Mike Pettine. I think it's just I think it's a scheme thing. I think whatever it is that Mike Pettine looks at when he looks at his defense, these are the people like. If you look at the defensive linemen, his it's a major focus. He wants a very strong and dominant defensive line, which he now has. But he wants big guys. He doesn't want the little Clay Matthews guy, which, you know, Kyler Fackrell is one of those guys. He found a role in there. But in general, he wants Preston, he wants Zadarius, he wants Rashawn. These big guys that can stand up, they can go down, they got the big long arms, they're strong, they can grab a guy, dominate him, throw him in the run. Right? He wants big, long, strong guy. And Dean Lowry's perfect. He's not, you know, 350 pounds. He's not a nose tackle. I don't even know if he's cracked 300 pounds. He's like a 295-pound guy, but he's like, what is he, 6'6"? It's just a fit. This is what I require in my defense. He's it. He's what I need to be able to run what I need to run. And since the day that, and I don't know that this is it, but this is why I think it would make sense with Raven Green. Since the day that Mike Pettine showed up, Raven Green has been elevated. Now, I don't think he takes precedent over Amos and Savage, but we run a lot of three safety, and I think in Pettine's mind, we can do three safeties, and I get three guys that I love. And Raven Green is a perfect number three, you know, however that works as far as rotating, whatever. It's the body type, it's the mentality, it's the ability, it's all the stuff that he does well. For example, phenomenal tackler. And so maybe, and again, I'm just assuming that people are right and that it makes the most sense that this is to make room for Raven Green. This is just about Mike Pettine seeing Raven Green as a legitimate piece. Not just like maybe Dom Capers saw him as a decent enough backup, but as a legit starter, a guy that I want starting on my defense, that I need actually as a piece of my defense. Now, maybe it's not necessarily having to be Raven Green. Maybe we can find an upgraded version of Raven Green. But I can't run my defense without that style of safety on the field. And so when he's coming back, Mike Pettine's like, get somebody out of here right now because I want my boy back. Because, I mean, that's just how it feels. I don't know. I just know what I can see. I can look at his stats. I can look at his grades. And I see a guy that's not really overwhelmingly talented. But it's not always just about that. It's about, if I'm going to run the defense that I need to run effectively, it's about the unit. And I think sometimes that gets lost as well. We look at individuals. We got to realize Mike Pettine is trying to run a scheme and a style of defense. And sometimes things break down because there's a weak link in the chain. But if I would rather have, for example, let's just say out of a scale of 10, you got a guy that's a 7, but can't, 7 just overall, right? We're not talking about specifically anything. Just, we would just call him a 7, like a PFF grade of 70. Then you got a guy who's like a 60, but he's got all the attribute. And he's got it mentally. He's got it upstairs as far as understanding the right calls and doing the right things and having the right assignment. I think Mike Pettine takes that 60 over the 70 any day of the week. Now, there's a breaking point, obviously, if we're talking about a 60 and a 90. we might deal with the flaws of the 90 because the guy's a freak. But that's just my way of trying to make sense of all this. And that kind of clicked with some of these extensions that are coming through where you look at it and just say, you know, we're expecting big money for Kenny and all these guys that are legitimate 90s, right? Elite players. And the Packers are like, well, we'll get there. And it's probably a lot to do with the negotiation, right? If you're a high-end player, you're like, no, I want big-time money. Whereas if you're Dean Lowry and the Packers come to you and you're like, we want to offer you this, it's like, are you serious? Of course I'll take that. I didn't know if I was going to be on the team next year, to be completely honest with you. That's great. Yes, please. And I mean, we'll have to also see how it goes. He's under contract through 2020, but if this is the move and he does come back and he plays regularly and performs pretty well, I would expect this guy to get a pile of money. Not massive money, by the way. We're talking Lucas Patrick. I mean, you know, not that little. It'll be more than that. But he'll get a pile of money because he just fits the scheme. He's the guy that Mike Pettine needs. And when you get a guy that fits your scheme, that does what you need a guy to do so that you can run your defense, you lock him up. And if they're willing to go to all this and cut Tony Brown just to make a spot for Raven Green because he means that much to the defense, as long as he can stay healthy, I think he's got some money coming his way. So, again, that's a lot to say about something that maybe isn't even the case. But I also think it's important to kind of try to keep that in mind because I think as fans look at maybe not specifically PFF grades, but we think in those terms, in terms of just how good are you. And I think the Pettins and the LaFleurs of the world look at, can you do the things I need you to do? And again, they would sooner take the 60 over the 75 if you can do what I'm asking you to do. And that's part of the reason why I've been hammering on Corey Linsley, and I have nothing against Corey Linsley whatsoever. It's just a thought exercise. If he's not exactly what Matt LaFleur wants him to do, even if he's good, even if he's a top 10 center, which is debatable, doesn't matter, but even if he is, for $10 million, if you can't do the things I need, like the Minnesota Vikings went out and in the first round got a center, and I'm sure they're still happy about it, even though he's not doing a great job pass blocking, he's getting better. But his ability and his athleticism to get up to that next level and just really do some awesome things in the running game is exactly what they needed. Matt LaFleur wants that. And so he looks at a Corey Linsley, a guy that's kind of short and stout but can bench press a 350-pound nose tackle like he's not even there. You know, yes, based on his grades, yeah, he's like a 70-80. So he's good. But I think Matt LaFleur would rather have somebody that fits the scheme so that he can run his offense effectively because everything plays off of that. The running game, the passing game, the rhythm, the flow, everything is based on this center being able to not just stand there and protect the quarterback or push guys out of the way when we're running inside zone, but maybe the things we can't see are the plays that we don't call because this guy can't do what he needs to do. You can't grade that with PFF. You can't grade the plays that are cut out of the book because these guys can't run these plays, and that's true of the wide receivers, the offensive line, the tight ends, all of that. Those are the things the coaches see that we can't see, no matter what kind of information we can gather. And again, I'm just using Corey Linsley as an example. I'm not saying anything necessarily. Maybe he's exactly what LaFleur wants, in which case he'll happily pay the $10 million and give him more money after that. But anyways, just a thought on that. Let's look at a few of these games. I'm just going to go on NFL.com and go down the line. That's usually how I do it, so it may seem like, well, why don't you save the best for last? Because I don't feel like it. So obviously we'll start with the noon games because that's how they organize it. Number one, Atlanta Falcons, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Both of these teams are who cares teams. And they're both teams that are in kind of bad spot. The Atlanta Falcons need to be a team, and this is an example of what I'm talking about with teams that don't always understand the flow of football. What I said, I think, yesterday about how Ted Thompson never really understood it, and he just wanted to try to maintain that, you know, 7 out of 10, 8 out of 10 football team. Ted Thompson would have done probably the exact same thing the Atlanta Falcons are doing right now. And what the Atlanta Falcons need to do is tear it down, and they just refuse. There was just a thing that came out yesterday or the day before saying they fully intend to bring back the same coaching staff and all that stuff. Now, whether that actually happens, I don't know. There's a lot of talk about, I think it was the Jaguars, a ton of people came out with sources are saying that, Marone is gone. And then the owner comes out, he says, that's a lie. But he follows it up with, we haven't had our meeting about it yet. So wait a minute, is it a lie or have you not had your meeting yet? In other words, you haven't told him yet. Which granted, that's a terrible thing for the media to do. But, I mean, it's going to happen, and I do think that the Jaguars are going to do the right thing and start tearing it down. I don't know. But there's a lot of teams that need to recognize that this isn't salvageable. Now, maybe Tampa is a different situation. They just got a new coach. Let's get him the opportunity to kind of put his guys in place, right? I need this, I need this, I need this. It takes some time. You got to give this guy some time to build his roster and see what he can do with it. The Falcons, They're like the 2018 Packers. And in 2018, they were the 2018 Packers. And actually, that's a fantastic case study. The Atlanta Falcons and the Green Bay Packers fell apart at the exact same time. Two powerhouse teams, right? They met in the playoffs. Two very good offenses that met in the playoffs. Obviously, Atlanta destroyed the Packers, but they were very similar. They both fell off. Brian Gutekunst ripped this thing to the ground. Fire the coach. Fire everybody. Ship off a bunch of players. Next year, you come around, you draft new players, you go heavy into free agency, you bring in new staff. Look where the Packers are and look where the Falcons are. At some point, teams need to recognize that tanking is a thing. Now, I'm not just talking about losing games. I'm talking about shut everything down. Shut it off. Switch off the burners. Just call it a day, man. And if the Falcons legitimately don't do that, which they're saying they're not going to, they're going to bring back the same people. And I'm not, listen, it's not always even about the coach being a bad coach like Mike McCarthy. I think he can come back and be successful. But sometimes you just get so caught up in this is what I do, this is what we do, and what you do doesn't work anymore. You have to be willing to adapt and change. And I think Mike McCarthy, you know, when you look, he was a hard worker, but he worked hard on how do I fix what I have and what you have is broken. He needed some time to go off and just throw everything in the garbage. Look at what all the other offenses are doing and rebuild an entirely new offense. I know that's what he said he did with Joe Philbin his last year. That's not what he did. He reworked his offense. But the Falcons aren't going anywhere until they recognize that they need to tear it up. And you look at them now, they're a 6-win team, possibly 7-win by the end of the season. And what do you get for that? And the worst part of it is, if you continue fighting and struggling and just trying to keep your head above water, you're going to continue to be a 7-8 win team for as long as you just don't, you know, don't acknowledge the problem. Because they don't have a talent problem, same as the Packers. That's exactly it. You got Matt Ryan and Julio Jones, and yeah, your defense isn't great, but there's no reason you're a 6-win team. There's a fundamental issue, and so you got to do the hard thing. But they're not going to, and there you go. And again, Tampa Bay maybe is a different situation. They don't have a great roster. That ends up being a GM problem. Now, maybe it's not, but the head coach is going to say, I need these players, and it's a matter of can the GM go out and get those players, and then we'll see what they can do. Tampa Bay has a terrible roster, and they've got 7 wins. So as a contrast, Tampa Bay with a terrible roster is one more win than the Atlanta Falcons, who have, you know, I mean, if Tampa Bay had some of Atlanta's players, they'd be much better off. I mean, arguably. Obviously, they got some great wide receivers, and Jameis, I mean, he can put up some points, man. But anyway, but the problem is something drastic has to happen, and there needs to be an actual plan. And I think with Tampa, it's possible with the new head coach. They have a plan, and it's just a matter of building. It's going to take some time. Atlanta is doing the exact wrong thing, and they gotta change it. The only thing they're playing for at this point is hopefully we'll get really lucky in the draft, and they'll have one of those Seattle Seahawks drafts, one of those Kansas City drafts where we hit big on like 4 of our picks, and it just changes the franchise. Otherwise, which is just extremely rare and unlikely to happen. Maybe one team a year is going to have that kind of a draft. You can't play for that. You got to be a little bit more realistic and proactive. Anyways, New England Patriots and the Miami Dolphins. I mean, Miami is, they're loaded up. They're like the Oakland Raiders. They got 3 first-round draft picks. They need to lose to the Patriots. Obviously, I would love for Miami to win. Miami isn't doing themselves any favors. They need to try to get as high up as they can. I mean, they're already in a pretty good spot. The problem is if you win, you might drop 4 or 5 spots. And that's when you go from locking up a quarterback to grabbing a linebacker, right? Instead of getting Tua, maybe, or you know, Justin Herbert or whatever, you end up, I don't know, getting Tristan Wirfs out, you know, as a tackle, which is just painful because you gave away a tackle so that you can get a first-round pick, and then you waste a first-round pick on a tackle that's not as good as the tackle you had. I don't get that transaction that they did with Houston. That I don't like that at all. But anyways, that's really all it is. In New England, they're trying to get that first-round bye. I think the only way they can is if they win and Baltimore loses, which is very, very unlikely. Although Baltimore might be shutting some people down. Actually, I don't think that's true. Let me check, because I think they needed to lose last week, too. So they can't catch the Ravens. They needed to lose last week, too, which they didn't. The thing that the Patriots need to win for is to not lose their number 2 seed. Because if the Kansas City Chiefs end up winning the game and the Patriots lose, then the Patriots become the 3 seed. And I'll be honest, I don't think they survive that. So from my perspective, as somebody that just wants to see the Patriots out of this, even if the Packers don't go on, I just want to see a different Super Bowl. I'm just tired of it. And I'll be honest, I think if the Patriots have to go on the road, let's say they beat the Steelers. Actually, if the Baltimore Ravens win, which I think they will, the Titans should be the 6th seed. I think the Titans could beat the Patriots in New England. But even if they don't, then they have to go on the road to play Kansas City in Kansas City. I don't think they, I mean, I know they're just dynamite in the playoffs, and they're really, really talented at beating really good teams by just taking away what they do best and all that, but they're just really struggling right now. You wouldn't think so at 12-4, but they're just not putting out their best effort, and they don't have the greatest roster, right? We looked at their wide receivers. They're not great. They don't have a tight end anymore. You know, the defense is really carrying this team at this point, and it is a very, very good defense, which is still what makes them scary, but I don't know, man. I think Tennessee could put up a really good fight, because Tennessee's a good, I mean, they've got, more so than Kansas City has, obviously, they've got a pretty solid defense, but they've also got a quarterback that, since he's joined, Tannehill is about the highest graded quarterback in all of football right now. And the wide receivers, their grades have elevated through the roof because of what Tannehill is able to do with them. Obviously, they got the offensive line and the run game down, which is carried over from what LaFleur has built. They can run the ball well. I think Tennessee is legitimately a scary wild card team. If I had to pick a wild card team, honestly, it would be the Tennessee Titans. The Texans obviously have a chance, but they don't have a defense. They don't have an offensive line. They don't have those core foundational. I like well-rounded teams in the playoff, especially teams with a defense. The Texans don't have a defense. The Chiefs don't have a defense. I'm not in on those two teams. Buffalo, Tennessee, New England, and Baltimore all do. But then there's also a question of you have to have some offensive performance. And I just seeing what Tennessee's been able to do, maybe it's a fluke, but man, they've just been carving some people up. Moving on to Chicago and Minnesota. This, in my opinion, is a win-win game. I'd love it for Minnesota to lose and be a 10-6 team coming off a two-loss streak. Because I do think that there's a mental component to this. Because obviously if they lose to the Bears having shut down a bunch of their starters, the mentality is it doesn't matter. We weren't trying to win. We're just trying to be healthy. Who cares? But that's not how that's exactly going to go. The fans, I mean, just think about how the media is going to react. Are they going to see Minnesota as a powerhouse? The media is so has such a strong recency bias. It's kind of incredible. And so going into the playoffs, they're not going to be looking at the Vikings as a powerhouse coming off two losses in a row, especially against divisional opponents. One of those losses being the Bears. And some people will be smart enough to say, well, it was the Bears and blah, 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 blah. You know, we shut down our opponents and the Bears have a good defense. And all. So what? And they're two home losses? So for that reason, I think it could hurt them. I think that could mean potentially doom for them in the playoffs. And they're, depending on how things shake out, either playing the Seahawks, the 49ers, or the Saints. In all those cases, they're on the road. I'm not sure which one is worse, to be completely honest with you. I mean, I know which one is best because which one involves us being in the number one seed. But just from the Minnesota Vikings standpoint, they're not the same team on the road. And the Saints, they're going to have a hard time as much as their offense has shown. I think they're a good offense. I don't know if they can keep pace with a Drew Brees offense. I don't think they're the kind of offense, as good as they are, as many points as they score, especially on the road in Drew Brees' home, especially with the Saints having probably still remembering that whole miracle thing, which it's amazing to me that the Vikings brag about that. The guy missed a tackle. You lost the game. It's not, I mean, it's like, oh, wow, it wasn't even a good, it was a bad decision. It was a bad play. You lost the game, and some guy missed a tackle. But yeah, let's put that in our highlights as one of the best things we've ever done. But I just think they're going to embarrass you. And I think your defense has been kind of beaten up on a little bit. The fact that the Packers came into your house and beat you, I just don't see that as a great situation. Seattle is probably a little bit more of what the Vikings are, but going to Seattle, traveling out there in that environment, as loud as it is, Russell Wilson is they're very similar, right? They both run the ball extremely well. They both have pretty poor offensive lines. Russell Wilson is a heads and tails better quarterback. However, the Vikings have better wide receivers. But I just think the Seattle is going to be the favorites in that. That's probably their best bet. I'm not really sure. Otherwise, it's San Francisco, which, again, you're going out to the West Coast, which isn't great on their turf. And you've got a powerhouse offense that is going to beat you in a million different ways and is going to stress that defense. We've got tight ends, fullbacks, running back, wide receivers, Emmanuel Sanders. We can throw to our running guys. We can run with our throwing guys. All right, we're just going to beat you every which way, inside and out. And our defense is not going to let your offense do anything. So I'm excited because I don't think the Vikings are going to do much. But the point is, if they lose, I think that really just does a little bit more to their mentality. This because they're not sitting all their starters. So some of these guys are going to go out there, give it their all, and lose in their house. And that's going to hurt. As much as people want to make excuses and Vikings fans will be all over the place saying, it doesn't matter, nobody cares, we're about winning Super Bowls, not beating the Bear, blah, 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 blah. Now, the reason I say it's win-win is that if the Vikings do beat the Bears, I'm all for the Bears not getting to 500. The Bears, who had won the division last year and actually thought there was something, couldn't get to 8 wins and couldn't even beat the Vikings when they weren't playing their starters. I'm okay with that scenario, especially since it doesn't really help the Vikings at all. I mean, they're the 6th seed, that's it. I don't think there's any scenario in which they move up to the 5th seed, because that's going to be, Seattle or the 49ers. Even if Seattle loses and they're both 11-win teams, Seattle's still ahead of them. So, again, that's going to be a fun game to watch. I'm going to be leaning toward wanting the Bears to win, but if they don't, I'm fine with the Bears getting stomped out by a team that shut down everybody. So that is a win-win game, because both teams have more to lose than win. Sometimes you watch a game like this and just think it's bad because somebody has to win, and that's problematic. In this case, winning gets neither of these teams very much, but losing is going to be probably more than anything morally defeating. Kansas City Chiefs and the L.A. Chargers. I think I've voiced my concern with the Chargers enough already. You understand what I think about them. In fact, somebody actually posted something in a group saying, what if you flipped the results of every one-score game or a three-point game? I don't remember exactly what it was. The Chargers would be number one in the AFC. They're a 5-win team right now. I think they would have 12 wins. In other words, and the Packers were much lower because, and again, this is what makes a really good team a really good team. When it comes down to one score, do you win or do you lose? When it comes down to the wire, are you winning or losing? This is what makes you a good playoff team also. Because a lot of games come down to the wire. You know, in college, there's a lot of blowouts. In pro football, there aren't that many. Most games, even if they seem like mismatches, are relatively close. Maybe at the end of the game, the team pulls away and wins by 13 points or whatever. But for a lot of the game, and sometimes right at the very end of the game, it's kind of down to the wire. And the question is, can you get that last score? Can you stop them one more time to prevent them from taking the lead? And the Packers have dominated that ability. And winning teams dominate. A lot of these teams in the playoffs, there's a lot of one-score games. And obviously, you don't get to 13-3, 12-4, whatever, if you can't win those kinds of tight games. Because most of your games are going to be tight. You got to find a way to win. And the teams in the playoffs are the ones that find ways to win those games. But I found it interesting that the Chargers would actually go from a 5-win team to a 12-win team if they just won those very narrow kinds of game. And I remember when the Bears were that way, 2 years ago now? And they kind of turned things around and became a really good team. So, I mean, you know, I hate to say it again, but the Chargers, they've got enough talent to be able to be a playoff team every single year and have a legitimate run at a Super Bowl. They just can't do it. And I don't watch the Chargers enough to figure out what exactly the problem is. I would have to think it's got something to do with coaching, even though they got a new coach and he actually took them to the playoffs, but they're right back to what they were. So I don't know what the problem is there. Some kind of a cultural issue. Maybe Philip Rivers is just not the right kind of leader. I don't know. I have no idea. But on the other side, the Chiefs obviously are hoping for a miracle, because if the Patriots lose and they end up winning, which they should, then they end up getting the number 2 seed. So this is a very big game for the Chiefs. They would love to be able to have home field advantage, similar to, they're in a similar spot as the Packers. They need a little bit of help, but if they can get it, they're going to get that number 2 seed. Actually, it's a little different. We're looking for the number 1, but, you know, whatever. They're looking to get that bye. And honestly, I'd like them to get it. As I said, I don't think the Chiefs, and this might come back to bite me, I don't see them as a team that's going to win the Super Bowl, because they just don't have a defense, and you can't do that in the playoffs. We've seen that year after year after year with the Packers. Unless you have a defense, you're not going to win. The Chiefs, obviously, are a team that everybody thought they were going to do real good. I said they're not going to. Why? They don't have a defense. You have to have a defense. That's it. So I wouldn't mind playing the Chiefs if they did make it to the Super Bowl. So that's the reason I'd like to elevate them. I'd like to keep the Patriots out of it, because they've got a very good defense. They know how to win Super Bowls. And so, yeah, I'll be rooting for the Patriots to lose and the Chiefs to win. Not that I'm not scared of the Chiefs. I'm scared of everybody in the playoffs. These are all the top of the top teams with enough ability to beat any team on any given Sunday. But if I'm trying to order things the way that I'd like them to be ordered, I'll put the Chiefs over the Patriots. Even with the Patriots kind of struggling, I still trust the Packers' ability to beat the Chiefs again than to beat the Patriots. Although it would be kind of nice to play and beat the Patriots. I just don't want them to win another Super Bowl, man. And I don't want them to take one from us. Just, I'm over it. I think I'd rather watch them lose than to get this historic Super Bowl matchup that everyone's been waiting for. I don't know. I would change my mind if you can guarantee a victory. Packers-Lions, I mean, I'm not going to save it for last because I don't have much else to say about it. This is a must-win game. There's no reason to lose the game. Protect the football. Don't shoot yourself in the foot. Just go play smart football and you should be fine. You should be able to run the ball, throw the ball. As long as, the biggest thing is play moderately good football and don't get hurt. Obviously, playing dominant football would be great, right? I mean, if we really do treat this like a playoff game, then treat it like a playoff game. If you play this game like you think it's the Super Bowl, then my prediction of 28-12, or I had it one before that that was like 31-0 or something. Oh, yeah, because that's what they did to us last year. Then there's no reason that can't happen. If you guys just go all out and just take this team to the behind the woodshed and just beat it, although they'll probably start pulling starters. If it gets too ugly, Rodgers is coming out. A lot of these guys, Zadarius is coming right out. They might actually start kind of easing him a little bit early. Like if the Packers go up, even in the first quarter, we might start seeing a lot of Rashawn, a lot of Fackrell. Because you just want to limit snaps of guys like Kenny and whatnot just to try to keep them healthy. And then if you get into the fourth, if the fourth quarter starts and they're up by, you know, I don't know if it's 28-14 or something, 28-12, yeah, we're pulling everybody. It's not 100% over, but, you know, you can always put them back in. Health becomes much more important at that point. So keep that in mind. It's also worth noting for those of you in the stock market game, which this is the last week, which is quite sad because that was a fun little game that we played there. Although, why does it have to be the last week? We're going into the playoffs. We can do this game in the playoffs. Let's do it in the playoffs. What am I talking about? Crazy person. But anyways, why don't we just take a break here? Just kind of a random spot, but we'll go through the rest of the games and then we'll call it a day.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Next up, Cleveland Browns, Cincinnati Bengals. The Bengals actually can win this game because it doesn't matter. They got number one seed locked up, so they can just go out and do whatever they want. Or just, you know, bench everybody so that you don't end up having a ACL tear for somebody they actually care about. I mean, I'm not playing Joe Mixon, because I don't want him to tear his ACL and then I don't have him next year. So, I mean, there's nothing to really gain or lose for the Bengals. They can't. It's done. The only thing is pride, but I don't know how you have pride in a two-win season. I'm sorry. There just isn't any. And as far as the mentality of the locker room, look, if I'm leadership, I'm going to go into that locker room and say, look, this is rebuilding time. This is the bottom. It's all straight up from here, which even if they don't accept a message, that's fine because almost all of them are going to be gone anyway, so I don't really care if they got a bad attitude about it because I'm cutting the entire team very soon. Cleveland, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of one of those things where there was talk about we're bringing everybody back. But again, there's whether or not that's true, I don't know. I think Kitchens needs to go. I don't think he was ready. What was it, 2 years ago? He was just a tight ends coach, and then he went up to offensive coordinator and the next year head coach. He's just not ready for it. It's not that he's a terrible coach or can't be a head coach sometime, but he doesn't know what he's doing. And so you got this kind of powerhouse team with a lot of really good players that actually last year was fine, and then they added a bunch of pieces. And Kitchens just didn't know what he's doing. Because, unfortunately for the Browns, there's more to being a head coach than just having a good relationship with your quarterback, which is probably already damaged. There's a lot more to being a head coach than, you know, the guy that built your quarterback. So what? Then hire a new coach that knows how to be a head coach, but make it contingent that we got to keep Kitchens in place as the offensive coordinator. That would have been fine. But anyways, I think for the Cleveland Browns, again, as much as they say they're bringing him back, I know Tony Pauline had said that there are several people saying he's on his way out. I think if they lose this game, it's going to kind of tip their hand. And in fact, Tony had said from multiple sources that there's going to be a lot of turnover, which could mean John Dorsey's on the way out, which would shock me because I still think he's one of the best GMs in all of football. I think he's done a great job. I mean, he built Kansas City. Kansas City is what they are because of John Dorsey. He came to Cleveland and rebuilt this team to what it was last year and then added a bunch more talent to be one of the best rosters in football, whether they can put it together or not. That's not John Dorsey's fault. The biggest problem John Dorsey made, assuming this was his call, was elevating Freddie Kitchens. But this guy builds rosters, man. If you're in rebuild, I mean, I'll tell you what, if he gets fired, it's going to be about 4 hours before he gets hired again. And he's going to go somewhere else and rebuild that team. He'll go to, you know, Washington, go to Tampa, go to Miami. I mean, who cares? I mean, anybody. Anybody that isn't already set up with a good GM would kill for John Dorsey. So I'd be shocked if he ends up getting fired. If he does, Cleveland is dumb, so they would do something like that. It is the worst franchise ever. I feel bad for Browns fans. Anyway, Saints, Carolina. Carolina is just in complete collapse mode. Obviously, they've already fired their coach. Looks like Ron Rivera's maybe already locked up for the Washington gig. I don't know. They're very, very interested. Rivera says, I'm ready to roll. Like, I'm ready to sign something today. So that might be getting done relatively soon. But I tell you what, Carolina could be scary if you know, John Dorsey, because Carolina's got some pieces, and they've got a franchise that's done some stuff. They've got a culture that I think is pretty proud and pretty strong. You know, they're probably going to go out and get a new quarterback. I don't know. That's a really weird thing, because I don't know. It's very strange. But I think that's one of those teams, maybe similar to the Packers, where if they can just do some really good tweaking, they could be in the playoffs next year. You got to hit on a few different things, and you got to get the culture right with a good head coach like LaFleur did, and get that locker room back to understanding how good this team can be with the right message and everything else. And I think they can be back after it. The Saints obviously are fighting. They've got a good amount on the line. A lot. It's more or less to do with they need to win, and a lot of things need to fall into place. They could still get the number one seed, but I don't think they're going to have any problem winning. Jets and the Bills. I don't think there's any way they can get eliminated. I think they're locked in. Let me check on that. I'm trying to play with this playoff machine. There's probably easier ways to do this. Yeah, so they got the playoffs clinched. They're building something pretty special out there. I think they're one of those teams that I'm not overly impressed with the roster. Therefore, I'm impressed with their coach. I think he's doing a fantastic job of getting wins out of that team. And I think next year they need to kind of go all in, building up that offense a little bit, because they've got a pretty solid defense. Although, some of their defensive players are pretty old. They might need to try to restock that a little bit. I don't know. The Jets are also one of those teams that are rated about 6-7 wins, so a loss probably isn't going to get them too much more in terms of draft capital. However, they're right at 10 wins. And let's say they win and the Broncos, Browns, and Falcons lose, then suddenly they're picking at the earliest 14. Whereas if they lose, they're only going to go up. Now, maybe. The Jaguars, Chargers, Panthers, Cardinals are all probably going to lose, which means they stay right where they are. But I mean, there's definitely nothing to gain from winning other than pride, which I know a lot of people put a lot of stock in that. And I guess it doesn't super matter picking 10 or 14. Actually, Cleveland's probably going to win, so they would be maybe 13. So yeah, it's probably not a big deal. Go win the game, I guess. I mean, nothing I'm saying actually even makes that much sense, because the players are always going out to play to win. Like I said, tanking takes place at the GM level, and anything they can do to try to sabotage the team to make sure they lose is already done by now. You know, shutting players down, shipping players off, firing the coach, any of those things that you might want to do, just do it now so that you end up losing. But it doesn't matter. Arizona and the Rams. Not a whole lot going on there. The Arizona Cardinals only have 5 wins. So this is a team that could actually potentially, I mean, at the best, could end up with a 6th pick. So that's one of those areas where if you're at 9 and you can move up to 6, which they probably won't, because Carolina, the Chargers, and the Jaguars would have to win. But it's worth losing to be able to move up closer to 5. Because, I mean, look, the talent drop-off from 1 to 2 to 3 to 4, it really starts to level out when you get to, like, I don't know, 7, 8, 9, 10-ish range. And then once you get beyond 10 to 11, 12, and actually, like I said, I've done the study, a sort of smaller-ish study looking at all the players and all the grades that they had got, just to kind of get a general idea. Right around 12 is when it just flatlined. Between 12 and, like, 22, there's, like, no difference at all in the quality of players over the last few years. So if you're at 9, I don't want to risk dropping to 14, especially when you have a chance of losing and moving up to 8 or 7 or whatever. So again, most people think it doesn't matter. I do. I think there's certain points, especially if you're in the top 10, to try to jump up a few spots. Because they're those once-in-a-generation players, you know, granted, the first overall pick is, you know, what is it, probably 60% of the time is a quarterback. So it might be a little skewed that actually might be less good than the number 2 or 3 spot, because 2 or 3 is where you're getting a bunch of pass rushers and tackles and guys that are like those actual freakish generational players, as opposed to just a quarterback, the best quarterback in the draft. But you just look at the quality of players in those top 3 especially, and even 4 and 5. I mean, those just elite, never seen them, generational type guys, those guys are gone by the time you get to 3, 4, 5. And then you get the second tier, like really, really good guys that are in, you know, the 3, 4, 5, 6, 7-ish. Then you got those guys that, you know, are kind of, they got some iffy, you know, like the Ed Oliver thing. Well, he's kind of smaller, but man, he's scary good as a pass rusher. That's 7, 8, 9, 10. So you want to be in the top 10. So for me, it does matter. If I'm a Jets fan or a Cardinals fan, I want to lose. But I've given that speech enough times already. Oakland and Denver, same exact situation. They're both 6-7 win teams, so it's just kind of a bad situation. Denver obviously just started their rebuild, so they got to continue that. And their defense, they've done a great job building that. They got to get an offense. Vic Fangio already in year one. It took him 3 years to build that Bears defense to what it is. In year one, the Denver Broncos, obviously statistically and whatnot, it doesn't look all that impressive, but they started coming on real strong. Some of those players are already top-tier players. They've already elevated beyond what they were last year, which that's what Vic Fangio does best, is get the best out of these players and put them in positions to win. I think next year this Denver Broncos defense is going to be top five, if they aren't already, I don't know. But they're going to be a scary defense. They just got to build up that offense. Oakland, I already like Oakland. I like what the head coach did. Their roster is not a 7-win roster. Now, they're in complete collapse mode. They're playing like you would expect with the garbage roster they have. But if they could actually put some talent on this team, I think John Gruden has done a great job of coaching this team to actually win football games. I just think they're going to do a terrible job of acquiring talent. I could be wrong. I don't think they're going to do a good job. I mean, to come out of a draft in which they had, what, 3 first-round picks and 2 second-round picks, and the best they got was a really good running back. And we'll see how this goes long-term, and obviously he's a very, very good running back, but, I mean, come on, man. You had a chance to really do some stuff. Cleveland Furl? What are you, drunk? That's a terrible pick. But whatever. Philly and the Giants, don't super care. Philadelphia's pretty much got this thing locked up if they can beat the Giants. If they lose to the Giants, they're probably not going to be in the playoffs, so it matters to them. The Giants, I mean, you know, they're a 4-win team. They need to lose. And I've been saying also, I think this is a team that's relatively close. They had Chase Young locked up. They decided to win a game. That's dumb. Look, there are certain things that are going to turn a team around. And I think Chase Young is one of those guys that has that ability, because it's specifically a need for them is to get a pass rusher. If they already had one, then so what? Then we can get a really good tackle. They're still going to get good players with where they're at. I mean, maybe. They're at 4. Best case scenario for them is that they lose the game and for some reason Detroit and or Washington win the game, which obviously for us we hope that's not the case, and then they go back to 2. But, you know, picking 4 isn't the end of the world. They'll have a good player. You know, they might be able to get a Jerry Jeudy to replace Odell Beckham, get a really good tackle, whatever. But that just would have been such a transformational piece to be able to get a Chase Young. To basically just imagine like Nick or Joey Bosa on the Giants team with the new quarterback, with Saquon Barkley, with their revamped offensive line. I mean, they've got some pieces. I don't know. I don't care about the Giants. I'm just, as a football fan and observer and somebody that enjoys the process of rebuilding, I just thought they had number 2 locked up, and it was a dream scenario. Absolute dream scenario, and they just gave it away. Why? To win. Oh, cool. Now you're a 4-win team. Now you have pride. No, you don't. Who's proud of this? Who's proud of being a 4-win team? Don't give me that pride garbage. I'd rather have pride in winning than Chase Young. Okay, you can be proud of being a 4-win team for the rest of your franchise history with that mentality. I'll take Chase Young, thank you very much. I want to win Super Bowls, but whatever. Just gotta hope for everybody that Philadelphia wins. It's better for Philadelphia, it keeps Dallas out of the playoffs, and the Giants will have a better football player as a result. So everybody wins, except Dallas, which, again, everybody wins. Colts and the Jaguars. Jaguars, as I said, are headed toward a rebuild. They've needed a rebuild for a while. They've just been clipping along at this good, not great. They had something with that real strong defense, right? This is a team that pushed all in. Unfortunately, they had Blake Bortles as their quarterback, and they couldn't quite get where they needed to go. And then it just fell apart from there. So they need that time to tear down and rebuild, and I think they're going to do that this year. Indy, really unfortunate, because they were a really hot team last year. Then they lose their quarterback, and now it's just like, I don't know what to do. I don't think you need to tear it down, but you got to be real intentional about coming back. Maybe looking at a new quarterback. I don't know about a new coach, probably not. But you got to have a very specific plan on how to get back there, because this is your team. This is a team that was good enough already to get into the playoff, and everything's kind of falling apart. So before you get to the point of needing to rebuild, let's really clamp down and figure out what are the things we need to get this thing going and go out and get it at any cost. Tennessee and Houston is actually going to be a really good game in terms of being basically a playoff game. It means a lot more to Tennessee, who have not even clinched the playoffs yet. They need to win. But Houston's got the division locked up. They're not going to get a bye. So number one, I'm sure they want to keep Tennessee out of the playoff. And also, it's just kind of for Tennessee's sake. Like, is this for real? Because all the things I'm saying don't make a lot of sense. And they are on a 2-game losing streak. They lost to the Texans once already. They lost to the Saints, which are 2 playoff teams. And now they're playing the Texans on the road. But, I mean, again, everything I'm saying is accurate as far as what this offense is able to put together. And maybe, look, maybe they're just not ready yet, right? They just lost two games in a row to two playoff teams. Maybe that just shows that they're not actually ready to be at that next level. But they've got something. So it'll be more interesting than anything. It'll be interesting to see, you know, maybe it's Tannehill. It's got to be a fluke, doesn't it? I mean, I don't know, man. Again, it'll be more interesting than anything. We'll see what happens. Neither of these teams I would expect to be in the Super Bowl anyways, but who knows. Dallas, Washington, as a person who has no vested interest in either team, I'd rather see Washington win. Couldn't care less about their draft stock, although they would be dumb to do so. They have the number two pick. They got Chase Young locked up. Possibly a quarterback if that's what they want to do, but I doubt it. And Dallas losing would just be fantastic because they are a 7-8 team. They don't deserve to be in the playoff. Number one. And number two, keeping them below 800 would just be glorious. It'd be great. And I'd love to see it. I doubt it's going to happen, but it would be pretty fantastic. Pittsburgh and Baltimore. Pittsburgh doesn't have much going on. They can still get into the playoffs, but I mean, who cares? I mean, obviously they do, but what is Pittsburgh going to do? So they need the Texans to win, which again is very possible. But they have to beat Baltimore, which is going to be the hard part. Although, again, they are sitting their starter. So, man, what a smack in the mouth of the Tennessee Titans. Because all Tennessee needs is for Baltimore to beat the Steelers, and they got a playoff spot. And Baltimore's going to rest their starters. I don't know what that team is without Lamar. I'm not saying they're a bad football team, but I can't imagine they're anywhere near as good. I mean, they've got RG3, so they should be able to run a similar style of offense, I guess. But it's not Lamar. He's nowhere near as good of a thrower, and I don't think he's going to do anything like Lamar can running the football. In fact, I don't think he's going to even want to. He's so injury-averse at this point in his career because he's been hurt so many times, he's probably not even going to want to run very much. It's just speculation. I don't know, but I don't know. I'm not sure who else all they're planning on benching, but I don't know. It'll be interesting. And then finally, the most important game outside of the Packer game for the Green Bay Packers. We need Seattle to beat San Francisco. And it is in Seattle, which is huge. That is a tough place to play. Now, very, very strange anomaly. The Seattle Seahawks have actually been a lot better on the road than at home. And they're, I think, 7-1 on the road and like 4-3 at home or something ridiculous. I don't care. I'm not buying it. Weird, freakish anomaly. I mean, to be fair, two of their losses at home were the Saints and the Ravens. That's not anything to do with home or away. That's just because it's the Saints and the Ravens. So if you disregard that, they've really only got one loss at home to the Arizona Cardinals, which is a really weird, freaky thing that it's hard to explain. But whatever. I'm very glad it's in Seattle because that is hard to play Seattle in Seattle. But anyways, that's all I got. A lot of this is more interesting than anything. Interesting based on what is the team going to do going forward. Are they going to fire their staff? Are they going to rebuild? Are they going to try to cling on like apparently the Falcons are going to do? Cling on. Or embrace the tank. Who's getting into the playoffs? Seeding? All that stuff. But for our purposes, Packers win, Seahawks win. All is right with the world. So some really big games coming up. And apparently no Monday night game, probably because of the playoffs next week. So we'll have all these answers by tomorrow morning, which is very, very exciting. So anyways, you folks have yourselves a fantastic day filled with much football. And I will talk to you tomorrow. Have a great one. Bye-bye.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.